Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, the free speech video network. And today we're joined by one of my favorite reporters, analysts, investigators. J.D. Rucker is his name. I've had him on before. It's been probably far too long. His website is called DiscernReport.com. And he also is the editor of The Liberty Daily, which I actually think is the best news aggregation site out there today, above any others, including my own, by the way. So, J.D. Rucker, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on. I think you're doing extraordinary work, extraordinary writing and reporting. Welcome. It's great to have you.
Damn it, Mike, you make me blush right off the bat. How can you do that? That's just wrong. I'm very humbled. Thank you for having me on, sir.
Well, you are an example of the fact that hard work eventually pays off. You put in the effort, you do the work, you know, it's tough. Somebody on your staff, and you, I'm sure, is scouring the internet for the most hard-hitting breaking news stories, and that's what people find on thelibertydaily.com. It's amazing. It's not easy.
No, it's definitely not, but it's a lot of fun. I mean, it gives us the opportunity to really be able to stay on top of things. You mentioned staff. You know, this is a two-man gig. It's me. I'm the editor. And Matthew Burke is the owner of the site. He's the one that actually started the site way back in 2015, 2016, around then, and as an alternative to Drudge. And now, yeah, between the two of us, we have to read through sometimes 1,500, as much as 2,500 individual headlines per day, mixed across 250 to 300 sources, plus whatever anybody else sends us. So
right.
It's hard, but it's good because, again, I get to stay on top of things. I get paid to do what I would love to do anyway if I wasn't get paid to do it. So it's good stuff.
Well, I'm just going to give you major kudos for that because my crew knows this as well. But every day before I do my show here, I'm checking your site. It's the last thing I check for show prep to make sure, like, if there's something breaking that you have there, I got to cover it. And very often that's the case. So you're doing amazing work. Keep it up. And Discern Report, by the way, discernreport.com. I have it on my screen here. As always, thank you for republishing some of our stories on Natural News. You're always welcome to do that. And I mean, so is everybody. But, you know, you have a great sense of what's important and what isn't. But right now, here we go. From your website, where did it go? Trump pleads not guilty to all 37 bogus counts brought by Biden's Department of Justice. So this is the big breaking news right now. Give us your commentary, please, JD. What do you think is happening?
Well, it's the big breaking news because that's what they want us to be focused on. They don't want us to be focused on the Biden bribery scandal. They don't want us to be focused on everything that's happening, especially as it pertains not just to Biden, but to Ukraine. They don't want us focused on any of the 25 other major threats, major scandals, major lies that are being told to the American people. Dave, you know, I tell people whenever there's bad news for the powers that be, bad news for the deep state, the powers and principalities, or, you know, whoever you want to call it, a lot of people say it's just the Democrats, but it's not. It's the uniparty swamp. Whenever there's major bad news, you can expect some other news to be thrown out there. And they've been sitting on this indictment. They've been on these charges for a long time. They just like, oh, crap. They're really finally coming out with this whole Biden's getting bribed thing or got bribed thing. So, well, you know, we need a big one. Okay, what's the biggest thing we got? You know, aliens? Nope, aliens didn't work. All right.
Yeah, they tried the 10-foot aliens.
Yeah. Let's get an alien video. Nope, that's people are kind of scratching their head on that one. So, yeah, let's just throw Trump out there. So is it the biggest news? Of course. You know, unfortunately, just the fact that the news is being pushed onto us doesn't change the fact that this is still a former president of the United States who should be the sitting president of the United States being charged for major crimes, and they are bogus.
Yeah.
So it sucks that we have to cover it, but we have to.
Well, okay. So two things, but doesn't it show that they really are terrified? The Democrats are terrified because they know that Trump can beat them again. I mean, he's already beaten them twice. And he could beat him a third time. And I mean, honestly, just through deductive reasoning, if they weren't terrified of Trump, they wouldn't even bother with these indictments. You know, if they had the 2024 election completely locked up, they wouldn't need to mess with this. So it shows their vulnerability.
I believe so. But here's the thing. And this is the part that I think sometimes gets missed. that are maybe not missed. Missed is the wrong word. I think that there's too much emphasis being put on 2024 with this. We have to understand something. Okay. The elections don't start until next October. Anything that happens between now and next October is essentially can be erased, can be debunked, can be whatever. Okay. And we know this from the 2016 election and the 2020 election. 2016 election, we saw all kinds of bombshells dropping about both candidates. You know, this is why they called the October surprise. It wasn't until the big bombshell about Hillary Clinton in October of 2016, that was the one that ended up sticking, you know, not to mention that nobody liked her and everybody loved Trump. But then we fast forward to the 2020 election. And all these things about Joe Biden, oh, he's hiding, oh, he's this, oh, you know, Hunter Biden is a criminal, James Biden is a criminal, Jill Biden is weird, and all this other stuff. They didn't actually get scared of anything until October of 2020, when the New York Post tried to release information about Hunter Biden's laptop. That's right. When they started freaking out. That's when so I'm not suggesting this has nothing to do with 2024. I just look at this as if the Biden scandal hadn't come out, okay, then this indictment would never have happened. Not at this point. They saved it specifically for when they needed to suck the air out of the newsrooms. And this is it. Now, but to answer your question directly, is this ammunition that they want to use against Trump? Absolutely. Would they have rather used it next year? Yes. They would have rather waited until, you know, right around the primaries. It would have been a great time to try to take him out and get some, you know, get Mike Pence or somebody else to be the nominee. But they needed to pull out their biggest gun because they're trying to protect old Joe.
So by your analogy, then you may be implying that they don't really have a lot more ammo against Trump. They had to roll out the big guns now. Maybe they've moved too quickly.
Donald Trump, there's one thing that they've learned, and this is where he's very much like, I would say, superior to both Bill Clinton as well as Barack Obama, as far as his ability to be immune to scandal.
Yeah.
They threw out their big guns in 2016, or so they thought. You know, they thought, oh my gosh, you know, here's this video of him saying this. Oh, here's him saying this. You know, and they were completely outmatched. They had never seen anything like him on our side. They knew that it could be done, that you could manipulate media and that the people could be made to ignore certain things with Bill Clinton and more so with Barack Obama. But in 2016, they learned, oh, crap, we can't just, you know, throw out scandal and have it stick to him like it would stick to any other Republican candidate before or even after.
Right.
OK, if you had said those things about, if you reveal the things that Trump was, you know, allegedly did or participated in back in 2016 with porn stars or whatever, if you would unleash that on like a Ted Cruz or a Ron DeSantis or whatever, they would be done. Donald Trump was immune because people have that understanding, that expectation of him. Fast forward to between 2016 and 2020, and that's when it's like, you know, none of this is going to work. We can't just throw scandal at him. We got to throw legal – throw impeachment. Here, throw two impeachments at him. Let's arrest him. Let's charge him in New York. Let's charge him in Georgia. Let's charge him federally. This is all they've got. And this is where – how we know you're – like you said earlier, they're terrified of this guy.
Yeah, they really are. And also, you know, speaking of scandals sticking to people – what's your take on Senator Grassley now coming out and talking about this apparent audio recording of the Burisma executive saying that they recorded these conversations with Joe Biden and Hunter Biden that reportedly, now again, I haven't heard this audio yet, maybe we never will, but they're saying that this audio shows Joe Biden accepting bribes or kickbacks for favors and you know, what have you. What do you think about that? Will that get buried or does that have legs?
Well, it's Chuck Grassley. Let's be clear. Chuck Grassley is not one of those guys that, you know, goes out there and throws things against the wall, you know, and throws out rumors. Okay. He's as far as congressman goes, this guy, number one, he's old. Number two, he won't say it unless he's sure he can show it. Okay.
True.
This isn't, he's not Adam Schiff. He's not even like Matt Gaetz or, you know, those on the right who might be a little bit more speculative, we'll say, with their accusations, or Marjorie Taylor Greene, you know, with Grassley saying, it's like, oh crap. I can say with a 99% certainty that yes, he's heard this audio. Yes, they've checked the audio. Yes, it's there. And yes, the Biden crime family is compromised by a major, at least one that we know of, a major player in Ukrainian business and politics with Burisma. That's, I mean, you know, you ask the question, if they can, let's put it this way. If they can bury that one, and they will do everything they can to do that. If they can bury that one, then let's just call it. The nation's lost. We have absolutely zero discernment. We have absolutely zero ability to take something that should be the biggest presidential news in the history of our nation. If we can't recognize that, and we're off here looking at, oh, look at these, and you know, this, look at that. If we can't even focus on the biggest scandal possibly in American history, then maybe we deserve everything we're getting right now, Mike. I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer, but that's the dumbest thing ever. If they can pull the wool over our eyes on this one, we don't even deserve a nation.
Well, but let's war game this, though, even from the point of view of Republicans. Is it a fair argument to say that Republicans would rather face off against Joe Biden than whoever might replace him? Because let's say if this kind of scandal takes him out, then the Democrats are going to find somebody else who might not be an Alzheimer's patient, you know? So,
you know, well, here's the thing. If you fast forward to before the primary, before it was certain in 2015 and 2016, before they knew for sure that Donald Trump was going to be the nominee for the Republican Party. You know, he was going on Stephen Colbert. He was going on Morning Joe. He was getting interviewed and getting softball interviews from every leftist journalist they could find. They were loving on him. They were just, I mean, the Colbert one always stands out to me. And the reason I bring that up is because, yeah, you asked Democrat strategists back then, you know, who would you rather not see as president? You know, Ted Cruz, or maybe they would have said no to Ted Cruz, or a Marco Rubio, or a Ben Carson, or a Jeb Bush, or Donald Trump. Who's your worst case scenario as president? They would have been like, oh, we definitely don't want Trump. We don't want Cruz. He's kind of right wing. Probably don't want Carson, you know. That doesn't fit. But, you know, let's get Jeb Bush or something in there. But they rooted for Trump because, like we're about to do here, they gamed it out. They strategized. They outsmarted themselves. They thought that Donald Trump would be the person that would be the easiest
to defeat
for Hillary Clinton to defeat.
Right.
So when you ask that question, would we rather have Joe? Would we rather, you know, or would the Republicans rather go up against Joe Biden? Or do we want to go up against like an RFK Jr. or Gavin Newsom or Michelle Obama? Right now, the answer is obvious. Of course, I'd rather take Joe, but I'm not going down that road. Because to me, it's a question of he's evil, he's bad, he's not just got dementia, he's clearly corrupt and maybe the most corrupt president in our history. And we're a country that had Bill Clinton and George W. Bush and Barack Obama. So, I mean, we know corruption. He's worse than all of them, you know. So,
yeah, plus he sniffs little kids.
Strategize.
Yeah, he's a kid sniffer too.
He sniffs kids, and he probably raped at least one girl or one former staffer, not raped, but sexually assaulted. You know, Tara Reid, who's now in Russia, apparently. I mean, come on. You know, I appreciate the question, but to me, if Joe Biden can be taken out, I'm not going to try to keep him in there just so we don't have to go up against Gavin Newsom or Michelle Obama.
Okay. Well, you mentioned. Thank you for that answer. Your analysis is always very well thought out. So let me ask for your analysis on RFK Jr., because you just mentioned him. Of course, he's very popular among a lot of independent media. Ed Dowd is now going to be the treasurer for the RFK Jr. campaign, by the way. And I have said that I support RFK as the Democrat nominee. I would love to see RFK versus Trump. But what are your thoughts on that whole scenario?
You just nailed it. Okay, I hadn't heard about Ed Dowd. I love Ed. I think for those who maybe, I'm sure your audience is familiar, but you know, Ed, former BlackRock guy, this guy's wicked smart. I mean, one of the
He's
smartest
awesome.
Economic guys you'll ever talk to. So that's a smart move by RFK Jr. You know, surrounding yourself by good people, that might be a very good sign. If it's RFK versus Trump, hey, look, I would rather have Trump, but you know what? I'm not going to cry if it's RFK, because as of all the possible Democrats that I've seen in 20 years, maybe longer than that, he's the only one where I'd be like, yeah, okay. Okay, well, we can get certain things done. Okay, we can really expose COVID mania. We can really look at a lot of things that maybe Trump wouldn't look at. We can look at that under RFK. So I wouldn't, I'm not an endorsement before anybody says, oh, Rucker just endorsed RFK Jr. No, but I would love to endorse him as the Democrat nominee. If the general election right. is RFK Jr. versus Trump, I will be rooting for Trump with everything I've got. I will be pushing for him, campaigning for him. And if he loses to RFK Jr., it'd be like, ah, well, at least it wasn't Gavin Newsom, Michelle Obama, or
yeah, you could still Joe. Live with that. But RFK Jr., by the way, I just learned, just recently tweeted out that he would pardon Julian Assange on day one if he were president. And in fact, he said he would erect a statue in honor of Julian Assange in Washington, D.C., which I thought was the best answer ever. Now, you know, Trump had the opportunity to pardon Julian Assange, and he failed to do so, at least in his first term. So, you know, here's a question. Would Trump do that given the situation now? I think probably so, is my guess. But you have any thoughts on that?
Oh, no, for sure. Now, I think... Look, people will throw up what he did or didn't do during his first term all the time. And I agree. Look, you know, you mentioned that RFK Jr. picked Ed Dowd. My gosh, I would love for Trump to make such good decisions yes. on personnel. You know, and I would love for Trump, you know, he comes out again, in favor of Assange. Yes, Trump, there's a lot of things that Trump should have done. He surrounds himself with, you know, people say, oh, he surrounds himself with idiots. I'm like, no, he doesn't surround himself with idiots. He surrounds himself with very smart people that are ideologically and philosophically wrong. Somebody whispered in his ear that he shouldn't pardon Assange, that he shouldn't pardon any of these various people, you know, that it would hurt him, his legacy or whatever, his ability to run for reelection or whatever. It looks Trump unleashed with a second term and no prospects for a future term after that. If he's legacy building, which is what we want, there might not be a better president when yeah. it comes to legacy building than a second term Donald Trump. And here's the thing. People say, oh, you know, legacy building is bad. No, folks. Legacy building is bad when you have bad people building legacy. When you've got somebody who loves the country, whose goal, I mean, and, you know, I know Trump loves America, but Trump also loves himself. And that's not necessarily a bad thing when his ideology is aligned with ours. So, yes, I would love for him to have a second term where he can start doing things that are going to put him down permanently in history as changing the world. And pardoning Julian Assange would be a great first step.
Yeah, I think you've nailed it, too, in recognizing that one of Trump's failures in the first term, although, again, hindsight is 2020. I'm not trying to accuse him of anything nefarious here, but one of the failures was just the people that he brought in to surround him, to work with him. They were not on board with we the people and our hope to restore the republic. And perhaps Trump was naive in that first term. He will not be naive in another term. I think he would go in there and just start kicking ass on day one, frankly. That's my take.
I agree. Well, people, I think, sometimes forget. You know, you go back in time, go all the way back in time to 2017, okay, before late 2016, early 2017, right when he's forming his administration. At that point, he's made deals to get into office. He's made deals to make things work, and he's being whispered in his ear by people like Reince Priebus, like Paul Ryan, like right. Chris Christie at the time, until Chris Christie had his whole debacle. Chris Christie was going to be a major player in the Trump administration before Bridgegate, okay? So you've got all these various people, these rhinos that are there, and he's Trump. You could say that people say, oh, he puts too much stock into loyalty. True, but he's also very loyal himself. And these people, like Reince Priebus, like Rex Tillerson, H.R. McMaster, people that helped him get into office, he did reward them. Fast forward to a second Trump term, and at this point, it's like, you know what? He's been screwed over too many times by people that he trusted, his own vice right. president, his own, you know, multiple secretaries of state, multiple
AGs
and chiefs of staff. So this time he's like, you know what? I'm putting in the people that I know that I can trust. And he does that, and you know it's Trump triggered, okay? Trump fully enabled, and we'll see what he can get done.
Yeah, and you know the executive power of the president is quite extraordinary. You know, Trump could fire the FBI director, and I believe under the his executive power, I think he could frankly fire every FBI agent that exists today and essentially shut down the FBI and force a reformation of it just by the stroke of a pen, right? There's so many things he could do. And I think he held back in that first administration thinking that, you know, that his ideas would be respected, his orders would be carried out, so to speak. And that was not the case, but, you know, maybe a third time is a charm here. We'll see.
Well, he went into this thinking, you know, operating America as the CEO of the United States of America. That's what he went into the Oval Office thinking. And he learned over 4 years that that's not how it works. You know, it is very different being president. You have things that you can do, things that you cannot do. And I think he's going to, hopefully, Lord willing, he will have smarter people, better advisors who are saying, this is what you can do, this is what you can't do, this is where we're going to get in trouble, this is where we're not. But he'll also have people that are going to be, you know what? I don't care. Just do it.
Yeah.
Okay. President of the United States, just do it. You're going to have, there's going to be somebody who's going to object. If you want to get rid of the FBI, you can't get a room full of any 10 people in the world who are all going to be in agreement. Okay. So yeah, in the scenario that you just laid out, I hope that he has, you know, puts, I guess you could say, gumption or perhaps testicular
fortitude,
strength,
yeah.
Fortitude ahead of just, oh, you know, don't do that. That might get you in trouble, Don. No, get some brave people in the office.
I want to ask you about Ukraine and Russia next, but just a comment on what you just said. The Democrats never have any in-house White House attorney that tells them, no, you can't do that. That would be unlawful. They just do whatever the heck they want anyway. I mean, whether even throw the LGBT flag, all over the White House, it violates who knows how many codes of conduct. They don't care. They just do whatever they want. And they get away with it most of the time because they do. But on to Ukraine and Russia. Now, it seems to me that Biden and his handlers have really been pushing to keep this war going and to escalate it as much as possible, perhaps because they miscalculated and thought that a war would make Biden more popular, but not if you're losing it. So where do you think things stand with Ukraine and Russia and the insane U.S. State Department at this point?
There's a couple of different questions there.
Stacking them up.
It works. I love getting it from multiple angles. But here's the thing: when you've got, we're looking at this scenario as, and it's very important. Let's start with this point. Yeah, Joe Biden and his handlers, we have to pretend like Joe Biden is essentially a kamikaze pilot. Okay, is he playing like he's going to be in there in 2024? Absolutely. If Barack Obama called him and said, "Hey, Joe, we need you to tank your administration, get Kamala ready, or you know what, let's replace Kamala within the next couple of months, and then get ready to kamikaze your stuff, and we'll take care of everything with Burisma for you, and you can go off to La La Land, and you'll get pudding on Thursdays." He'll be like, okay, you know, you say where to go, Mr. President. I mean, Mr. Obama. I mean, what do I call you now? You know. So let's be clear: when it comes to foreign affairs, when it comes to LGBTQA, whatever flags on the White House, when it comes to any of this stuff, Joe Biden literally is just being told what to do, and they will sacrifice him, not even as a queen. He would sacrifice him as basically a knight or a, you know, somebody between a pawn and a queen. They'll sacrifice him if they need to. They're just hoping to do that at the last moment, or maybe they're hoping to not have to do that at all. Okay. So, but then now to answer your question, as far as what's going on with Ukraine, with Russia, this is where it really does take discernment. And I'm not going to claim to know all the answers, because that's above my pay grade. I think that's above anybody's pay grade who doesn't have basically direct access to the powers that be, the powers and principalities, you know, whether it's on our side, on the deep state, whoever. Unless we have that direct knowledge, all we can do is speculate. But my speculation is this, that it's not about let's make sure that Ukraine wins. They don't necessarily care about that. Or let's make sure that Russia wins. Or let's make all they care about is let's make sure that we have a narrative, that we have a reason to prolong this indefinitely. let's use this, because whenever you've got a war, because this isn't a war, it's a regional conflict, let's be clear about that. But whenever you have this regional conflict that the entire world is at least partially focused on, it's a skeleton key for corruption, for smuggling money, for smuggling weapons, for smuggling humans, for smuggling influence, for smuggling all this stuff. That confusion of war, this regional conflict, they don't care about winning or losing. They just care that the war goes on and on. You know, this is the war that never, I mean, that's what they really want. We got out of Afghanistan. We milked the Middle East dry for now. So you know what? Well, I guess Eastern Europe, let's do it.
Yeah.
That's my take.
Well, but I agree with you. But in doing that, you know, at some point they're going to run out of Ukrainian men. I mean, that day is approaching. You can throw all the tanks and artillery units you want, but unless you have men to run them, you don't have a fighting force. And it seems like it's getting close to the point where either Poland is going to have to maybe step up and say, oh, we'll send, you know, 50,000 troops, or NATO countries are going to have to start throwing troops directly into the mix. And then it is a world war at that point.
Absolutely. And again, we can speculate. There's all sorts of possibilities. You know, NATO gets involved and we do have a world war, or they just lose and it's time to move on to Taiwan or Iran or North Korea or West Africa, or maybe they can stir something else up. Oh, you know, this big uprising in Brazil or whatever. I mean, who knows? Maybe it will shift away from where the geopolitics goes completely economic and we're focused on BRICS versus the United States. You know, and I'm not even talking about BRICS versus Western nations or BRICS versus the rest of the world. It would just be them versus us, because the rest of the world, for the most part, would be sitting there. Okay, well, you guys duke it out, and whoever's still standing, they've got our money, right? So, we can't know for sure, but I think you're absolutely right that whatever the play is, whether it is Poland, whether it is NATO getting directly involved, whether it is, you know, Russia saying, okay, you know what, we'll just make a deal. Time's up. We were supposed to keep this going until March 2024, and now time's up. So you guys get rid of Zelensky, and we'll pull out our troops. And Zelensky falls on his sword and says, "Hey, you know what? For the sake of my nation, I'm going to do this. But thankfully, I've been invited to become, you know, UN Secretary General. So now I'm whatever." I there's so many scenarios out there, Mike. I mean, we don't know what's going to play out. We know that we're getting played. That's the only thing we know for certain.
Good point. Yeah, a lot of this is theater for narrative purposes. And, you know, the State Department's fighting a narrative war much more than an actual kinetic war. But let me shift gears here a little bit. You have a remarkable capacity for remembering names and dates and events and news and then sort of connecting the dots on all of this, which is a lot of what you do at your website, Discern Report, or thelibertydaily.com. And by the way, I'm just going to nominate you. I mean, you should be Trump's press secretary if Trump wins. They should bring you to Washington, D.C. to help explain things to the corporate media, because you would just wipe the floor with them with your knowledge. But can I ask you about your background? I mean, what did you do before what you're doing now? What's your background?
I'm very ashamed that prior to 2017, I was not helping my nation. I was helping myself, I shouldn't say ashamed, that's the wrong way to put it. I was in business. I had a couple of companies that I was running. Didn't really care. You know what? And I was a conservative, I was a Republican, I was all this other stuff. But it's like, oh, you know what? Whatever happens. I'm gonna go out and make mine, get my family, you know, supported. It's expensive out here in Southern California. Got private schools to pay for, got cars and homes. So prior to 2017, I was basically apolitical. I still follow politics, but I wasn't involved in it. It wasn't until I started realizing and watching how the media was going after Donald Trump, watching how the media was going after freedom, going after truth, that I realized, you know what, I need to go back to my roots.
Yeah.
My roots was in journalism. My very first job out of college was with the Edmond Evening Sun, which is a tiny newspaper in Edmond, Oklahoma. And I didn't even start off reporting. I started off in the copy department or ad department or whatever. And, you know, from there, ended up having a family, and that changed my trajectory. But in 2017, I decided, you know what, I can't raise my family and make money and do it from the sidelines? Is it possible to do both? Can I participate in politics, culture, faith, spreading the word, spreading the gospel, spreading the truth about what's happening in this planet, what's happening to our nation? And so that's when I decided, you know what, let's launch at the time NOQReport.com, which has now become DiscernReport.com. I was blessed to be able to start working with the Liberty Daily, 3 years ago? Gosh, it's been a while. And haven't looked back since. So my my trajectory really has been, my history really is about getting there and being in corporate America all the way to the point to where I could no longer do that and decided to throw my hat in the ring as far as spreading the truth.
Well, you know, good for you for taking a stand for America, because it's apathy that leads to the destruction of nations. And you didn't go down that road. You stood up and you saw what was happening and you realized
I went down
wrong.
That road for a couple of decades.
Yeah. Well, yeah, look, the timing for everybody is different. But I'm glad you mentioned NOQ Report, because a lot of our readers are familiar with that website. We link to NOQ Report a lot. Now it's Discern Report. But what did NOQ ever stand for? I never knew. What was that?
Exactly. When people ask me, why did you get rid of NOQ Report and you redirect it? It's because I could never get it branded properly. Because initially when it launched, it was supposed to be Knock Report. Okay, NOQ was supposed to sound like Knock, but then I would go on interviews and they'd call it NOQ Report. No Q Report. I had one interview where they're like, oh, this guy's against Q. He's got the No Q Report. I had Knock Report, Noak Report. I had one interviewer, I'm not going to call him out, one interviewer who literally called it by three different pronunciations during one interview.
Wow.
It was supposed to stand for, the initial idea was supposed to stand for News, Opinions, and Quotes.
You're kidding me.
No, and I
never knew that.
It was supposed to, nobody knew it. And it didn't, we used to have my show. My wife would say, you know, for those, I'm not kidding you, Mike. I had my wife, my beautiful wife, go on and say, for those of you who don't know what NOQ Report is, you know, and she did a 30-second clip that we ran every single show for like a year. It was just a poor, awful name. Okay. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, I failed. I failed at getting it branded. I thought that this could be like, you know, what does Uber mean? Or what is, you know, whatever. I don't even know a good example. Nope. So we decided, you know what? Let's put our news site at AmericaFirstReport.com, because nobody will mispronounce that and everybody knows what that means. Let's put our aggregator and curator over at DiscernReport.com. Everybody will know what that means. And then let's just keep it simple. Not Noak, Knock, Neek, you know, Nick Report, NOQ, whatever. Just keep it simple.
Okay.
So I appreciate that plug for.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating to know the history. And yeah, the letter Q became so politicized because of the Q movement that then anything with Q in it, suddenly there's all kinds of questions or theories about what that means. So thank you for answering that. Moving on, one of the subjects that you do cover a lot, of course, is the economic situation and currency and de-dollarization trends that appear to be happening globally. Now, we mentioned Ed Dowd earlier. Ed believes that we're far from losing dollar hegemony globally because of the debt markets, right? And he's a super sharp guy. You gotta pay attention to what Ed says. And yet at the same time, every day it seems you watch the news, every day there's another announcement from, you know, Brazil or Saudi Arabia or China about some other deal that bypasses the dollar as the currency for transactions. What's your take on what's happening globally with the petrodollar, its status, and will it survive the weaponization of the SWIFT system that the West carried out against Russia?
I love you. You see, people ask the silliest questions. You ask amazing questions.
Oh, thank you.
Because you got to really pay. Your questions are right. You know, they are very squarely aligned with exactly what people need to know. Let's take it backwards from the end. As far as will we survive the weaponization? You know, the weaponization of the SWIFT system used against Russia. That was the wake up call for the world to start saying, oh my gosh, if they're going to do it to them, could they do it to us? Maybe we need to look at somebody else. And then you got the CCP going out there and other BRICS nations saying, hey, see what they did to Russia? You know, just just stand by. Okay. We got you covered. We're building something over here. We're putting a team together. We got you covered here. You know, just wait until 2024, 2026, around that time. So yeah, as far as what we did with the SWIFT system, using it against Russia, using it, alerting the world that their perfectly safe money is not perfectly safe on this system, that was intentional. I think that was a wake-up call. Now let's go. You know, you mentioned Ed Dowd and his perspectives on it. I understand what he's saying, and he's absolutely correct. And I would never in a billion years ask, you know, Ed Dowd to try to go against anything he says when it comes to the economy. It'd be like, you know, going to Tom Brady and saying, hey, you know, I was watching your throwing motion. I got some tips for you. But, you
know, right.
I'm not going up against Ed Dowd. But with that said, I think there's one thing that Ed Dowd does miss. Okay. He's absolutely correct. When you look at the debt market, you cannot say, oh, it's, you know, you got all these people out there saying, oh, the dollar's dead. It's just, you know, snap of a finger and it'll be gone. That can't happen. Okay. That'd be like saying, okay, so we're going to take off the bottom six blocks in this Jenga tower and watch, it's not all going to fall. No, it will fall. The question is not whether or not it'll fall. And this is the part that Ed needs to understand. They know that it'll fall. The question is, where will it fall to? And when will they be ready to catch as much as they can after the fall? And obviously this is where we get into central bank digital currencies, digital dollar, digital yuan, and eventually this one singular, it's one world, you know, Fed coin, not the Fed coin, the Unicoin, you've talked about many times over at naturalnews.com, or any of the various iterations of that with the IMF, with the BIS, with the, you know, in conglomeration with the United Nations and the World Economic Forum and the Council for Inclusive Capitalism. All these guys are looking, and it's not a question of when do we pull away from the dollar. It's a question of, okay, get all the pieces together so that when we do pull away from the dollar, when it does explode, that there will be a soft landing. And it's not a soft landing for you or me. It's just a soft landing for BlackRock. It's just a soft landing for the Fed. It's just a soft landing for, you know, all of the various nations and the rich people and the elites. Where we fall, they want us to be in disarray, because it'll be easier for them to say, here's your, you know, here's your vaccine passport, here's your digital ID, here's your new crypto wallet or you know, central bank digital currency wallet. Don't worry about all these other ones. We took those out. Don't worry about Bitcoin. We took it out. Here's your one world currency.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah, please.
Actually, in particular, and don't forget the UBI also, because I think they're going to be offering a UBI, universal basic income, for people to accept the central bank digital currency. But right now we have the SEC going to war against Coinbase and Binance and the entire crypto space. They've named 67 coins as securities right now, which implies that they're in violation of the SEC, which is on this crazy power trip under Gary Gensler. It seems to me, I mean, you really just said it, they want to collapse crypto in order to kind of make way for the central bank digital currency, which is a centrally controlled Orwellian, you know, surveillance money system that no rational person would want any part of, except with the UBI through that system, a lot of oblivious Americans or Europeans would sign up for it. Hey, here's my free money. I have to, you know, do the thumb scan or the iris scan or the RFID chip implant or whatever, mark of the beast, but they need the money. But it's printed, you know, it's money that's losing value every single day. Whereas in the cryptocurrency world, there are strict limits on, you know, no government can print Bitcoin, which, thank God, right? So this is shaping up to be the most epic battle, I think, in financial history of the world. What do you think?
Yeah, you nailed it. It's funny how you absolutely nailed it. Listen, people talk when it comes to the economy. I'm not talking about when it comes to religion or culture or politics or geopolitics or anything else. When it comes to money, okay, there's only one battle. It's not left versus right. It's not conservative versus leftist. It's not China and BRICS and versus the United States. There's only one battle that's going on economically. It's centralization versus decentralization. The good guys are the decentralizers. The right. Good guys are the ones that say, you know what? We like the fact that Bitcoin and all these other cryptocurrencies are decentralized. A central bank digital currency built on similar technology is the exact opposite. Unfortunately, the vast majority of people don't understand that. And I'm not just talking about old people, young people, people in between. I'm saying the vast majority of people don't know this. Okay. Last study I saw showed that 34% of Americans are against a central bank digital currency. They're against a digital dollar. And the funny part is that you've got, I forgot which publication it was, but they were like, oh my gosh, this is great news. And I'm thinking to myself, 34%, that means that 66% are either completely in the dark or in support of having a digital dollar. We're done. If we don't get the word out, if we don't wake people up to what Gensler and what Powell and what everybody else is doing with this, then it doesn't matter what happens in Ukraine. It doesn't matter what happens on Election Day 2024. None of this will matter. You know, there's a reason why Henry Kissinger said, you know, we always talk about the first two in his warning. He said, you know, who controls the food supply controls the people. That's bad. And we're seeing that. He also said who controls the energy controls entire continents. That's bad. And we're seeing that. But it was that third part that's most important. Who controls the money controls the world. And he wasn't kidding. He meant it when he said it. And we're seeing that play out. So yeah, you nailed it when you said that they're going after crypto. Crypto is the biggest threat. You know, crypto is the Donald Trump of money.
Okay? I like that quote. Yeah, well said. Yeah.
So
Gensler's going to have a hard time claiming that Bitcoin is a security or Ethereum because he's previously stated they're not. And there's no one person at the top of Bitcoin that you can point to. You know, just a mythical name, you know, Satoshi. But aside from that, there's nobody that you can go after. And from a technical standpoint, even if they try to shut down Bitcoin, there are so many thousands of nodes running all over the world. They physically, I mean, electronically cannot shut it down. They can declare it to be something, but they can't stop people from using it. But there's one more factor in this, JD, or you want to comment on that?
Well, no, I agree. They wouldn't with anything they can't control, they'll just outlaw it. Period. I mean, Bitcoin, they can just say, you know, they can't keep people from using it. They'll just tell people, hey, if you're caught using it, you're done. And that'll account for 98% of the population will be in the category of they don't want to break the law, or they'll just say, okay, well, I guess we shouldn't go down that road, and they'll find something else. Oh, look, they said that the you know, this digital dollar is the same thing. Okay. Well, see, yeah, I do Bitcoin. I do the digital dollar. people.
Yeah, they'll have a narrative.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. But one other factor in all of this that we've got to cover here. Are you okay for another 5 minutes or so?
I got 5 hours, brother. I can talk all day.
Okay. Awesome. We have, of course, so many American workers are being made obsolete by gains in AI systems that are already replacing jobs at IBM and places like that. And then, of course, robotics. So, you know, bipedal robots replacing humans in warehouses like Amazon.com warehouses, self-driving vehicles for transportation and logistics, self-flying airplanes, that's coming, you know. The fact is that a lot of American workers, both blue collar and white collar, that is, if any of them even want to work anymore, because a lot of them aren't even doing that, just staying home and collecting whatever. But they're going to be, a large percentage will be obsolete. They'll be forced to live off of UBI. So they'll be on the CBDC system, getting the UBI money to buy groceries. And then as part of the compliance requirement for that system, they will be required to take new vaccines for every new pandemic that's rolled out. And you and I know these vaccines, of course, are harming and maiming and killing a large number of people. So it's kind of like, wow, they're just writing everybody off and making them take the death jabs in order to get paid to buy groceries. Wow, that's evil.
Yeah, it is. I'm not a big fan of Hollywood, and I never recommend a movie, except there's one movie I watched, not because it was a good movie, but I was watching it for research because somebody said, hey, you know, you need to see that movie. Not because it's a good representation of the future, but because it'll kind of get your brain going, you know, what that future could look like. And the movie was called Ready Player One.
Oh, yeah.
And in it, you know, they didn't explicitly say UBI. They didn't explicitly say AI controlling everything. But all of that was implied. All of that was implied that And the only way that you could get to a society that was represented in this movie is if you have AI robotics, you have, you know, basically machines that are taking care of us. You know, I think that the most well thought out movie example of that was the humans at the end of WALL-E, Pixar movie. Where they're,
oh yeah. On their floating beds. Yeah.
Yeah, oh my gosh, somebody fell, get the robots to pick the person up, you know. Yeah, on their floating beds, and then like one of the digital screens goes off and the lady's like, oh my gosh, I didn't know we had a pool. Stuff like that. That's what they're hoping for. That I think that's what we would like it to seem like. And not when by we, I'm not talking about you and me, I'm talking about Americans envisioning the future. Maybe they can see that with UBI and AI that they're going to get to sit around and just do nothing. Reality is more closer to, I think, what they did in Ready Player One, where there's still a lot of risk out there, but we'll see. Bottom line, to answer your question, between those, we'll say the one thing of AI and robotics combined to make us obsolete, to be better than us at being taxi drivers, construction workers, you know, it'll be like, oh my gosh, that's a job. That job is too dangerous, so you can't do that. So we'll just get robots to do that. And it's like, oh, but people have been doing that for 100 years. It's like, yeah, well, you don't need to do it anymore. Go sit back and we'll fill up your account as long as you get vaxxed and as long as you don't post anything on Twitter that we don't like.
Well, so. Right. And in Ready Player One, by the way, remember they were living in these stacked container apartment cities where, you know, everybody was just stacked in like animals, and it was all a metaverse, virtual reality world, like what Zuckerberg was trying to create, which has failed. So far, they'll try again, but it was all a virtual reality existence, right? And you had all your wealth, all your assets, your experience was in this virtual reality world, which, by the way, a lot of the characters in that world kind of remind me of this idea of transgenderism, where people believe that you can be any gender you want. It's just by wishing it. So, And this has come out in even healthcare organizations, even those tied to the Vatican, are pushing transgenderism. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Yeah, that works in your online role-playing game. You can be a wizard or whatever, or an elf. But in the real world, a man can't become a woman, it actually turns out, right. No matter how hard you try.
Yep, absolutely not. Since you brought it up, and what would a discussion with Adams and Rucker B, if we didn't talk about transgenderism? You know, you got the fake boobs being flashed at the White House. Could you imagine any other administration this happening? People ask me, you know, why I'm so concerned, and it's not about choice. You know, oh, if you're for people's liberty, shouldn't you want them to be able to pick and choose, you know, what they want to be? And it's like, well, yes and no, as long as they can do whatever they want if they're a consenting adult. But it's when they start imposing that, indoctrinating, brainwashing, and even in many cases forcing other people, and forcing especially children, to participate in it. And I could go on for 6 hours, so I won't. Yeah. I will say this. People ask me, why are you so concerned? Why can't you just – because that whole side will eventually die out. And so I say, look, transgenderism and LGBTQIA plus supremacy in general – has nothing to do with just, oh, it's a lifestyle. It's about forcing people, making them not understand the realities of this world. Imagine if you're a kid, okay, you're 8 years old, you got all these weird confusions going on, and somebody, a teacher and your parent and your whoever, they're able to brainwash you, indoctrinate you into thinking you're not a boy, you're actually a girl. Okay, so in this kid's mind, as he's growing up and he's seeing faith, you know, being taught about faith, being taught maybe about the Bible or whatever, being taught about science, but he sees, wow, so if I'm a boy but I'm actually a girl, then that means that only one of two things are possible. Either God, who they say is perfect, God made a mistake when he made me, or God doesn't exist at all. And that's the part that scares me, Mike, is knowing that they're breeding an entire generation of people, not that are confused, because kids have always been confused throughout, you know, the history of children. Okay. Kids get confused and they do stupid things. I get it. It's not because of the confusion. It's not because of the weirdness. It's not even just the horrible, horrible, permanent genital mutilation that many of these kids put themselves through or are put through by other people. It's not just that. It's the fact that you're taking an entire generation and you're basically making it to where, logically speaking, they're not going to be Bible believers. They're not going to grow to be faithful. They're going to grow thinking that sin is good. Good is evil. Evil is good. This is America. In 2030, we're all doomed. That's the part that scares me the most about it. And I'm sorry, but you brought it up. So we had to say
it. We appreciate hearing your analysis of that. I think our audience shares all of those concerns with you. I do as well. There's much more to this than just simple transgenderism. It's a spiritual war against humanity. But with that said, JD, guess what? We're out of time for today. Although this has been fascinating. This is going to be a fan favorite discussion. We got to have you back. You and we really dig into these issues in a deep way that we don't just scratch the surface. You ever been on with interviewed by somebody who just has no clue what's happening in the world, right? We've all had that experience. And you're like, oh my God, like you almost have to give them a list of questions or they're not. Mom. Yeah. Mm. No. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Right. We're not trying to embarrass anybody. It's just that it's great to have an informed, intelligent conversation. So let me plug your websites here before we go. TheLibertyDaily.com. This is, I think arguably the best news aggregation website out there. Timely, nails everything. Just look at this. Really fantastic. And then your website, JD, is discernreport.com. And, articles every day, your writing, your analysis is truly outstanding. So folks, visit both of those websites, support JD Rucker, and everybody, you can share this video as well. So thank you, JD. This has been a lot of fun. We got to do it again.
Absolutely, Mike. Thank you. Blessing as always. God bless you, sir. And God bless your team. They are fantastic.
You too as well. And thank you for participating in our Breaking Point documentary series. We have another episode coming out with you in it. I was just looking at that 2 days ago. That's coming out shortly. Thank you for everything that you do. And we'll talk again soon. All right.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, JD. Have a great day. And thank you all for watching. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com. And of course, you can repost this video. Feel free to do so. And just give credit to JD Rucker. Link to his site. And, if you wish, use Brighteon.com. You can repost this video on your own channel on Brighteon. So thank you for watching today. God bless America. God bless each and every one of you watching. I'm Mike Adams. Take care. Today's interview is brought to you by several companies that have preparedness supplies that I'd like to make you aware of. We thank them for their support. HoplightArmor.com has American designed and American made body armor right here. This setup fits 95% of the population. Use discount code RANGER to save a little bit on these, and they have many other products, and they have sappy plates and so much more. Check it out, hoplightarmor.com. We've also got shieldarms.com, which is one of my favorite manufacturers because they have this folding AR-15. It's a patented mechanism, but they also do custom Glocks, and they have Glock magazines that are really top of the line. Check it all out at shieldarms.com. The Z9 Glock 43. Yeah, that sounds like something that we should be talking about soon. Stay tuned for that. And then finally, also I want to mention ARC seed kits. They're on my desk here. This is the heirloom non-GMO seeds. You're going to need seeds in order to, of course, grow food and supplement your food supply. If you go to arcseedkits.com, you'll find this seed kit. It's available now. Use discount code RANGER. You'll get savings on many of their products, not all of them, but many of them you'll get savings. And with this combination, think about it. You need to be able to grow food, but also to defend your property. And that's why we talk about firearms. That's why we talk about body armor where it's legal to own that. I don't think it's legal in New York State, so they won't ship it there. But you need to have garden seeds. You need to be growing food. You need to be competent in firearms and self-defense. And consider body armor depending on where you are and what circumstances you might face. This is all to help you get prepared to survive whatever chaos may be coming out there. You're going to need food. You're going to need ammo. You're going to need self-defense. So thank you for supporting our sponsors here at Brighteon Broadcast News. A global reset is coming. And that's why I've recorded a new 9-hour audiobook. It's called The Global Reset Survival Guide. You can download it for free by subscribing to the naturalnews.com email newsletter, which is also free. I'll describe how the monetary system fails. I also cover emergency medicine and first aid and what to buy to help you avoid infections. So download this guide. It's free. It's my gift to you simply because I want like-minded people to survive.